This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of June 22nd, and with me late on a Sunday night is my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
It's still Sunday! It's good, I'm good. I'm recording from the Studio C in the podcast annex here, and like, if I had a cat, I wouldn't dare swing it, because there would be damage.
Yikes. Is that how we're going to start it out? Hey, well, how did you like the new opening? Let's go there.
Oh,
put the cat out.
Yeah, indeed.
The imaginary cat.
Put the cat out. Okay. No, that's wonderful. I mean, I felt like I should be on that show. I know I am on the show, but I should be on the show so I can get the home version from Don Pardo.
Well, it was well done by a friend of the program, so we appreciate that. Yeah. We got some other things to spruce up the show, so that should be really fun as we go through the season, because we have games. We actually have guys on the bases now, so I'll use that clearing the bases drop and everything. So it should be fun with the new season starting and hopefully going through to the end.
Like that chance.
True. Okay, as we have been doing since the COVID-19 pandemic has started or was announced as a pandemic, thank you to all the frontline and essential workers out there worldwide. I keep saying this over and over, but...
Oh, man, can't say it enough.
We probably are going to have to live with coronavirus for a while, but it doesn't mean we have to. So let's try to see this thing off and get rid of it and do what we need to do and cover up and stay home whenever possible.
Here, here.
All right. On this week's show, I had to get creative. So we're digging out an interview with Chunichi's Moises Sierra that I recorded in Okinawa in February. And then we're going to talk about games. Guys on bases, running around bases, hitting home runs, throwing strikes. We're going to talk about every series and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Yeah, that clearing the bases sounds good. It's good to be back.
Yeah.
All right, so we tried and we were turned away. I was personally turned away by two clubs because we cannot easily go to the ballparks anymore. You basically have to set up an appointment to get in, which we tried, but they are limiting the number of reporters from specific or certain outlets, so it's very difficult to get in. So
one per team per company.
Yeah. So we will work as best we can to get interviews for you guys as we go through the season. I have set one up for this coming week, so we will have one for the next show for sure. After that, there are no promises, but we're going to try. We're going to do our best. Fill out the paperwork. So I dug up this brief chat from February when I went to camps in Okinawa. Back when coronavirus was just still a possible pandemic, although I think we kind of knew it was at the time, but we just weren't saying, were we, WHO? But anyway, I spoke to Moises Sierra, a one-time hitting prospect for the Blue Jays in their farm system. He's a Dominican player. He's 31. He was a developmental player in camp with the Dragons, and I got to talk to him before they had one of those spring training practice games, and he actually won a regular contract or earned a regular contract in the spring. It was in much less celebrated fashion than the Giants' Israel Mota, who we saw. I think we mentioned him on the show. We saw a video that the Giants put out where his mother was congratulating him and brought him to tears. So that was good. And Sierra he was a prospect with the Blue Jays. Then he went to the White Sox and then played a little bit with the Nationals, and now he's here in Japan. But he did lead the Mexican League in hitting last year, batting .355, so that is impressive. He's a line drive hitter, he says, but he can do everything. So let's have a quick listen to Moises Sierra. All right, so we're talking to Moises Sierra. Is that good?
Yeah.
Of the Chunichi Dragons. Welcome to Japan and welcome to the Dragons now. What made you decide to come to Japan to play?
So he signed a minor contract. So we happy to try to make the team. And I'm happy because I tried to play in Japan like 3 years ago.
3 years?
Yeah. So now he gave me the opportunity and I got a chance to make the team.
Why the Dragons? Why did you choose?
Because that's the 14. He gave me he looking for me, and he talked about if you want to play in Japan. I said, yeah, hell yeah.
Hell yes.
Yeah. And that's the thing, and I'm very happy.
Now you got Omar Linares here as a coach. How important is that?
It's very important because he Latin coach, and I can understand more, and he can help me. He can talk to me like right away. So it's very important to have a coach like Latin.
Is he helping you? Because I hear a lot of players need timing with the pitchers. Is he helping you with that?
Yeah. He talk all the time about the timing, about how the Japanese he throw the ball and how he pitch. So all the time we talk about that, about the timing. That's the heart here. So when you got the timing, you get.
All right, now what have you learned? It's only been 1 week, but I'm sure you learned a lot about Japanese style of play. What have you learned?
So I learned in 1 week. I learned a lot. So we try to learn like how they play the game, how everything, a couple things, you know. I forgot right now. So we try to, we talk about the time, you know. It's different for me because that's my first time here. So keep working, that's it.
Keep working and that's it, yeah. I know. Now, on this team, you got guys like Almonte, you have Biciedo, you have Martinez, you have a lot of guys.
I got a lot of guys here, yeah.
So you have to have some success if you're going to make the team and get on the first team. So what's your thinking right now?
So I think right now made the team, you know. So I'm very happy because I got a lot of Latin player here, so I working very hard for my team, and I'm so happy because the coach, he gave me the opportunity all the time to play, and he told me the manager, all the culture.
Now, what kind of hitter are you? Are you a home run hitter, average hitter, line drive guy? What kind? How would you describe yourself?
So for me, everything, you know, we can hit for power, we can hit for double, we can do a lot of stuff, you know. So.
Okay. Well, what's your best? What are your best?
I think the average.
Average?
Yeah.
Hitter?
Yeah.
Hitting what? Hitting all around the field or hitting to full?
Around the field. All the whole field. I can handle the whole field. So we get like land right hitter, like doubles, sometimes home run.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. So I got pop, so we got working in like Baspin more here this year. So, almost see.
All right. So, yeah. Now, you obviously just got here. You haven't played in Nagoya Dome yet. You haven't been to Nagoya yet, right?
Not yet. So, we're right now in spring training. So, not yet.
Yeah, it's a big park. So,
yeah, I heard that. So, you know, hitting good. If you hit good, the ball is gone.
If you hit it good, the ball is gone. All right. So you got a hit today in the game. Dropped a single in front of the center fielder. How was that for you? Did you feel good about it? It was a good hit, but then it just kind of fell in too. So how did you feel about it?
Yeah, I feel better. I feel better and better. You know, I feel good because I got a base hit and RBI. So I'm very happy. Like I say. Every day I feel better and better, so gotta keep working.
All right, good luck, man.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you again, Moises. I appreciated that early on back in February, like I said, and it was nice meeting him. And, you know, I actually bumped into him later that night, going to eat, and I saw him, and I didn't recognize him because he wasn't in a uniform, and he's waving at me, or he waved at me. I'm like, huh? And then I passed him, and I realized who he was, and it was like too late. I'd already done some kind of curb your enthusiasm kind of a thing where you should have waved but didn't, and now it's a thing. So I don't know if he's going to hate me or not when I see him next time. But what did you think about the chat?
I enjoyed it. First of all, I enjoyed his enthusiasm and also his desire to learn. Because I know the dragons. I could hear the answer before you asked the question about why did you choose the dragons. And of course, that's because Shigekazu Mori's out there trawling, you know, through the Dominican Republic and the Caribbean.
Trawling.
He's got the nets out, you know. He's got the nets out for guys who are essentially affordable.
Right.
Who are looking for work and affordable because the dragons, it's not that, you know, I don't want to call them like the cheapy dragons or anything because it's just, you know, they're in the newspaper business. And the
first time I heard that, that's pretty good though. I like it.
Well, I work for the Daily Gomuri, so what do you know? The,
that one I have heard. So that,
Kitchier is the one. So anyway, the, it's tough times for the newspaper industry. The Dragons used to be big free agent spenders, and now they're looking for a bargain. They spend the winter bargain hunting. And so I wasn't surprised. He's not ideal. You know, he's not an ideal signing at the age of 31. He really, until his big year in Mexico, he never really set the minor leagues on fire. But
right.
He never also really had a chance to adjust anywhere. I remember he reminds me a little bit of Matt Merton. When he came to Japan, I said, you know, first thing, what's your goal this year? He said to get 400 at-bats because I've never had 400 at-bats with one team in 1 year in my career.
Wow, yeah.
And it's hard to adjust when you're moving, you know, you're moving around. His major league high was 170 plate appearances, and that was split between the Blue Jays and the White Sox in 2014. So I was happy to hear, you know, that attitude, that joy of being here and eager to move forward. And that coupled with the fact that he has some teammates who've been through the ringer here, as well as Almonte and Dayan Vecierto, who speak his language and
yes.
You know, can clue him in on what he needs to do. And he seems certainly keen to do it. So I'm hoping this is the year he makes the adjustments he needs to, and he shows people, you know, how well he can play baseball.
Yeah, and I liked his enthusiasm as well. But when I heard that a Dominican player, and it made me think, a Dominican player who for 3 years has been trying to get to Japan. I'm like, what is that like? Because we always think, and I remember the first time I met our buddy Claudio Rodriguez from Toronto, and he said, yeah, I usually focus on the Latin players. And I thought, are there that many? I thought, and now you look at the Yomiuri Giants this season, and all their players are Latin players. And so there's a huge market, and I understand, especially with the Dragons in, I would say, the recent 10-plus years have been focusing on Latin players. So there's a huge market out there. So if these guys really want to make a jump to a league that in which they could at least make a mark, but at most, you know, become a star and really make some money, then sure, it's a great option. And you heard him say, hell yes, you know. So I thought about those aspects. And again, here's a guy who said it took a while. I think it's Zach Neal we talked to before who said Japan was on my radar for a long time and it's not easy to get here.
Yeah.
So that reminded me of that whole situation as well. And I very surprised to hear these guys who really want to come here. I'm happy about it. And, you know, we have been seeing ESPN has been broadcasting the KBO games and we've heard complaints about the level of baseball. And my first reaction was, well, come on now, don't complain. At least it's a sport. But of course we complain because we are looking at the level of baseball and we're like, well, this is not what we're used to seeing. And with Sierra, I, you know, he did get a hit in this spring training practice game thing. And mm-hmm. teased him about it was sort of a line drive, but then it just kind of lost steam and fell in front of the outfielder, one of those types of hits. And mm-hmm. And he said, well, you know, it's not necessarily about what kind of hit it is. It's just, you know, nice to have something positive happen. And making those adjustments really has to be hard, especially for a guy like this who's – we've seen more guys, I would say, closer to 30, so maybe 27, 28. But he's already 31, so he's not going to have a lot more chances. So it's important for him to get results when he gets in there. And I kind of suspect that with Zoilo Almonte, the first two seasons we've seen from him, last year he
was hurt. I mean, that was a thing.
He was hurt the first year as well. And he seems like a really productive hitter when he's healthy.
Oh, yeah.
But I would say that I would expect him at some point to be dropped down to the – or taken off the roster because of an injury. And I think Sierra's going to get his opportunity at that point. So I fully expect to see him on the top team sooner than later, to be honest. It has been, you know, Almonte, I think the Dragons didn't start him today just to give him some time off because they didn't want to risk it. I was listening to the radio broadcast today. And that's what one of the color commentators said, was they just want to rest him just since he's still healthy.
Keep him healthy. Well, there's something about that. You know, he said something about the way the Japanese hitters hit, and he's learning what they're doing. And I noticed something about Almonte. Now, I didn't have a lot of chances to see him before. Mm-hmm. The other night I watched him and I thought, wow, if Dion Viciedo went through the same sort of adjustment, sort of like taking tips from the Japanese guys, or maybe it's it's being around the Chunichi Dragons so long that sometimes you just want to poke at the ball. You know, you're not trying to drive it. You're just trying to put it where it will do the most good.
Right. Yeah.
And I was watching some of those swings from Zoilo Almonte in Friday's opener, and I was thinking, man, this guy's learned how to play Japanese-style baseball.
Yeah, well, he seems to be, I mean, the kind of player who can hit and make those adjustments and hit the breaking ball. And, you know, it's not a question of his ability. He hit 321 that first season. He hit 329 last year. I think he can hit. Just can't. He hasn't been able to stay healthy enough. I mean, he played 132 games that first season, which was a lot, but I think he played some of them injured. And some of them
last year, for sure, that was a huge cost in their performance.
Definitely. So I expect Sierra to be in the lineup sooner than later, like I said, and look forward to seeing him.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right, let's move along now. Before we start to talk about the games, there were some rules that were finalized this past week. So to update them, there can be 5 import players who are allowed on the first team, but only 4 can be dressed for a particular game. So they were debating that rule, and basically you can carry 5 guys on the road trip with you, but only 4 get to dress. And then also for the playoffs, the Central League formally announced no Climax Series playoffs for that side.
I think that makes sense, and I understand the thinking there. And in fact, it's really interesting.
Because I have an opinion about it too. What was yours?
Well, first of all, you know, there's only two dome stadiums in the Central League.
So that was mine.
Yeah, that was a big one. And you know, so it's outdoors and it's cold and it's harder to do the makeups. But you know, the Central League is keen on making up games because it's opening day and they've already got slots for makeup days.
Right.
Normally the Central League's like going, oh man, it's September. Shouldn't we start thinking about making up games? September? Are you kidding me? We got till the middle of October. Calm down, dude. But they are definitely not calmed down. They are on it. And that's very un-Central League.
Yeah. That's exactly what I thought was the dome situation, and you know, trying to make up games that are basically not going to count. And I would imagine if we get to September, October, and there's so many makeup games that they just skip them.
Yep.
Because we're already playing a truncated season anyway, so why force them in if they don't matter? They're only, you know, only games that matter are the ones that involve the top two teams, because those are the only ones that have a chance to make a difference.
That's kind of a poison pill for Japan to swallow. And it'd be kind of interesting to see if that changes thinking in Japan, because Japan's always been this, you know, we've got a meaningless game between two teams whose places in the standings have already been decided. But let's
and you're not going to get 143 anyway. It's already
So let's have them play the day before the Japan, and used to be even have them play after the Japan series starts.
Yikes! Yeah, we
have a couple of those games, you know, and it'd be like 10 people in the stands there for free.
Who wandered in off the street? Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, seeking shelter from the wind.
Right. So, and then the Pacific League is going to have an abbreviated PLCS. One round between the top teams. It'll essentially be a best of four series with the pennant winner getting all the games at home and starting with a one win advantage. So that's how the PL will do its playoffs. And so we had on Friday opening day, and it was I think I tweeted this or I sent it to you in a text or something. I said it's surreally surreal, and it's. This is such an unprecedented season and situation that we're in. It's weird and it's wild to try to figure out what we're going to see on the field as this season unveils itself. I was thinking that, you know, 120 games, it's no longer the marathon that people are talking about. It's more like a 40.
Come on, give us an analogy. I'm dying for this. I want to hear this.
It's more like the 20,000 meters instead of the 10,000 meters.
Okay.
And so you have to run at a little higher pace, but you're not going as far as a marathon. So you really have to pick up the pace. And games like today that the Carp lost in the ninth inning when you have a lead, they really sting. But the players, I heard someone on TV, a commentator, say, well, no, you know, everything's going to be the same. It's only 23 fewer games, so what the heck?
Central League's probably going, God, It took us 15 years to get rid of the Pacific League games that were making us look bad.
Yeah, right.
We ought to have this every year.
Yeah, we ought to do this all the time. So it was nice to see the start. We had stuffed animals in the seats. We had cardboard cutouts or cutouts only in seats. We had a stadium viewing in Sendai where fans were invited to watch the game outside, social distance. We had cards arranged in messages. I'm not sure what was going on at Tokyo Dome, whether they were cards or shirts or T-shirts or uniform shirts that they would have passed out or handed out to fans. We had live video conferencing of fans on the big boards at some of the stadiums. So it was kind of fun in that respect, and we had some quiet, and you actually wrote a blog post about the silence being too silent, and that the announcer's booth at Jingu apparently was too close to the field, and someone could hear. It seemed like both teams apparently could hear one of the announcers or the commentators talking about where the catcher was setting up. So that's interesting. I didn't.
Jingu is the broadcast booth are close to the field now. Mm-hmm. It used to be like that. They used to be way up in the upper deck, but they had shared them. But they're fairly close. I mean, the lower deck is fairly small at Jingu, so I can believe that. And I also believe that the Swallows didn't pipe in crowd noise like some of the stadiums did.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. Each stadium did different things, and we'll see this next week when the matchups change, and that should be fun to watch. So now keep one thing in mind. The Lions were an MPB best in those warm-up games. They were 8-1-1, and the Swallows were the worst at 2-7-2, and the Giants were just above Yakult at 3-6-2. And so I don't put much stock into those things, but you know, it seemed like the Lions were kind of on a roll, and then they lost 2 out of 3 at home to start this whole thing off. Anyway, the Yomiuri Giants had a chance to sweep, but the Giants were the only ones to get the sweep, and that was that came after they won their 6,000th game in club history on Friday, and that's an MPB record. They're the first team to get to 6,000 victories as a club, so that was nice for them. So anyway, we have three rookie skippers whom we didn't really mention much about in the prediction shows, and they combined went 5-4 today. So the Carp Shinji Sasaoka looked like he was going to win all three games to start his career as a manager, but they lost in the ninth inning, so they lost. He went 2-1, and then Rakuten's Hajime Miki, who yanked, I want to say yanked, but it pulled Daichi Suzuki in like the fourth inning the other day when he got a single to lead off an inning and they wanted a faster runner, so he just pulled him. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be different. It's going to be different. Anyway, and he's always tugging on his surgical mask, at least he was in the dugout. So I'm not all that familiar with what he looks like anyway. Mm-hmm. So for him to have that mask on and then for him to be tugging at it all the time, mm-hmm. I didn't know if that was like some idiosyncrasy or if he was nervous or is just uncomfortable in the thing. I'll have to do some research when we ever get out to a park. And anyway, Yakult's Shingo Takatsu, he won on Saturday to get his first win, but the Swallows lost that series. So, you know, good start, I guess, for the rookie managers. I want to start in the Central League in terms of talking about these games and about the series. So let's start with the Dragon Swallows since we had Sierra as the guest. And one other note before we get to this, though, we had two starting pitchers for the first time in NPB history hit home runs on opening night. And I thought that was pretty fun. I saw the tweets. I saw the tweets go on when Yuki Nishi hit his for the Tigers. And then obviously Daichi Osada of Hiroshima just dominated on the mound, pitched a complete game, and hits a home run. I'm like, he's doing his Clayton Kershaw out there.
Well, both Nishi and Osada had, I think, RBIs other than the home run.
Right, yeah, they were working the stick and the mound over. So.
I had to tell all those, you know, those people in the States who were foaming at the mouth about no, you know, about the DH, and I say, hey man, cool it. I know these guys did it, but we don't normally want to see
this. Oh yeah, I like the pitcher batting. Anyway, let's go. So, what did you think of that Swallows Dragon series, that opening series for?
Well, it was, first of all, the opener was maybe the worst playing conditions I've seen in Japan since the umpires refused to call the Bay Stars playoff game at Koshien in 2017.
Mm.
So the Tigers could catch up in the mud, you know?
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
This was the you know, people were running, looking at their feet when they were around the bases. You know, they were stepping gingerly because the things were just mud patches.
Right, right. And pools everywhere. Yeah. It was bad. It was bad.
I was certain that when Masanori Ishikawa came off after 5 innings and he pumped his fist that he thought, okay, this one's in the bag, complete game, baby. So
right.
He did not get his first opening day complete game. Okay. So there was that. And then the other thing was we had one good start of the six starting pitchers. The Dragons had one good starting outing. But obviously starting pitching wasn't everything because the Swallows were actually pretty good this time around. And the bullpen the Swallows bullpen only had one good game, and that had a bigger effect than their starters being useful.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I had my doubts that the Swallows would pitch as effectively as they did even today. But the bullpen wasn't terrible.
It was terrible.
Cost them that first game. Yeah, they cost them that first game in the rain. But after that, I thought actually the bullpen was pretty good. To won them the game, the middle game for sure.
Sure.
Since that's the only game they won. but yeah, I liked that. I liked Tetsuto Yamada's start. He hit home runs in the first two games. Silence today with a loss 3-0. But I also predicted, I think in the second prediction show that we did, that Munetaka Murakami of the Yaku Swallows was going to crush it this year, and he smacked a home run on Saturday as well. He got that first home run out of the way, although he did strike out with the bases loaded in the opener, and a hit would have tied the score at least, and then they possibly could have won. With this 10-inning game thing, I think, you know, it makes it really, really comfortable, I think, for the managers to use players early in the game. That's probably why we saw Miki yank Daichi Suzuki so early in a close game the other day on Saturday. But, I thought it was a good series for both teams, a good opening series.
Since we're talking about Murakami, I guess I have one question. How do you think of his defense around third base?
Well, he made one play. I mean, his problems are not at just one base. His problems are all over.
He made more than one play. He made a couple of pretty good plays.
I'm sorry, one play that was highlight worthy, I suppose, okay, that I saw, and that was the one in the rain that he stabbed and then bounced the throw to first, far enough away from the first baseman so that it came up waist high. It was a real nice candy hop. So, yeah, that was a good play. It was definitely a good play. I mean, I'd say he's not very good, and that he cost. That was last year. I know that guys get better, and that's obviously something he was going to work on in the off season. And hey, I wish him the best. I don't want to see games thrown away because of poor defense.
No, I know. I know you don't. But
I think, even though I don't think he was the rookie of the year last year, I said all along I think he's the better player between he and Koji Chikamoto of the Hanshin Tigers, but
hold on a second. So he's a better player, but he didn't have as good a year?
I said he's going to be a better player.
Going to be a better player. See, anyway, we won't go through this, but my whole thing was he had a better year. That's my thinking. Okay.
Well, you keep telling me, but I keep throwing in defense and base stealing and all the other things that make you a well-rounded player.
He's not a well-rounded player.
Well, okay then.
Which means, you know, Ichiro's got to be like the best player of all time because nobody's more well-rounded than he is.
Okay. I'm not making that argument, but if you want to
it's a similar argument, you know. I mean, there's guys who are more valuable players than Ichiro because he doesn't do some things. You know, he doesn't hit it for a lot of power and he didn't draw walks, but he did.
But I'm not going to take a one-dimensional player over a three- or four-dimensional player. And Murakami was basically a one-dimensional player. But, hey, that was last year. So hopefully he's much better.
That was last year. You were wrong last year. You can be wrong this year, too.
Ooh, okay. Well, we're going to
– let's move on.
We're going to fill in this rabbit hole with dirt and move along. good series for the Dragons. They got a really good performance from Kodai Umetsu today. Yeah. He threw 7 scoreless innings for the win. The bullpen, which I believe will evolve during this season, but was only needed for 2 innings today and was fairly sharp, so that was good. And I'm actually expecting a really big year offensively from Yota Kyoda, and he had a decent start. He had 4 hits in the series, so that was good. So good start for that.
Takahashi looks good. I mean, and you know, the Dragons are the Dragons. I mean, I'm so happy when, like I said, when Almonte's there with a little pop. I sure wish they had somebody else who knew how to hit the ball hard. But take what you can get. They are the Dragons.
Consistently, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, Takahashi has that possibility.
You're right. But
I have to see when Ishikawa comes up. But okay.
Yeah, okay. All right, moving along, the Giants and Hanshin series, and this was the only sweep in NPV of the 6 series, and they finished it off on Sunday with just kind of breaking the game open later on. But I thought the biggest game was that first game. The opener on Friday when Naoki Yoshikawa cracks a late home run to bring them back into the lead, and they end up winning that game. And that, to me, was the tone setter, in so to speak, because as we talked before, Nishi had hit a home run and knocked in a run prior to that, and then the Giants come back and win the game and just kind of stole it from them. I think they kind of took some of that opening day air out. And like I said, it's not a marathon. It's not a sprint, but you really have to pick up the speed and the pace. And I think losing that game kind of hurt. And I don't know. Maybe I'm making too much of a deal of it, but to me, that just kind of got them off with a bad taste in their mouth, and they just didn't recover, and they started pressing and just weren't able to get the bats going.
Well, I think
not enough to win the games.
I please show you have to come up with a better analogy.
Okay, really for what?
For the season, you know, what is it? I mean,
Yeah. It's a sprint-a-thon.
Well, I saw that series, and I didn't see much of that series because I was focused on other things. But Sugano looks healthy, which is a huge thing. And Taguchi, yeah, that's okay. He looked a little bit more like the guy he was 3 and 4 years ago. That's good.
Yeah, well, he competed. I didn't think he had great stuff that he was throwing out there, but he really competed.
No, but he was pretty much a pretty blah last year and a half. So, okay. Anyway, my other thing was, and then Yuki Nishi, of course, he had a career year at the plate.
career year.
On Friday. I tweeted. I did see that once where a guy basically had his career year in one game, and that was Katsuya Nomura's son. And I was at Chiba one day when he had a triple, a single, an sacrifice fly, and 3 RBIs and a walk. And I think that was like a typical season's output for him. So,
I remember that
career triple. Yeah, it was weird. Anyway, so yeah, Nishi with that home run, and that wasn't like your pitcher swinging, your accidental Yuki Inagita oops. That was a check swing, you know, a half swing, handed mistake swing that fell into the seats. He hit that puppy about 2/3 of the way up to the foul pole, and he smoked it. It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, that's why, you know, you could see he was looking for the pitch and that he was sitting on it, and then it came right in the middle of the plate. And I mean, he's like, oh, I can hit this, as he was swinging. You know, he's like, I don't have to change anything.
Was it his birthday?
Yeah, so obviously it's way too early to judge the Tigers, but I did like some aspects of the game. They did pitch well in places, and then the bullpen just didn't hang on or show up for them very well. And today, Onelki Garcia, the former Dragon, not very impressive, but it's just one outing. And it seemed to me, I don't know if you noticed it too, that we didn't see some of the pitchers that we expected to be in the upper third of the rotation, that maybe some of these guys are being saved for some home openers or something. And I think we saw that with the Dragons, because I expected Yanagi maybe to pitch or Ogasawara to pitch.
Yeah, instead of Kazuki Yoshimi.
I don't know what his numbers at Jingu are, but I don't remember him pitching but maybe one good game there in the past 5 years. And maybe that's not fair, because the past five, he has really struggled.
He's been struggled, but it's been the injuries. I mean, okay, last year was mediocre.
He's often looked good
when he's been healthy, which is about like once a month.
Yeah, well, he doesn't manage to pitch well at that particular location. Yeah, he does pitch well at the Dome. But I wanted to mention the Tigers' jerseys, because I saw them in camp. Mm-hmm. In Okinawa when I went, and I thought immediately when I saw them, I'm like, oh man, I want one of these things. These are cool, and they look really good. It's too bad they didn't play well in them.
They wore today?
Exactly, yeah, the ones they wore in this series.
Okay. Oh, right. I'm confusing them this is why. Oryx was today wearing the dark blue Buffalo uniforms.
Oh, those were not black. It looked blue on the TV.
Yeah, navy or something, but they're dark. And
it could be navy, yeah. It's possible.
Dark pinstripes.
They're
very similar to, Hanshin Tigers uniforms from the 50s.
Oh. And
so when I saw those, as soon as you saw that it said the Tigers, I'm going, wait, I'm confused. Now I was saying the Buffalo's ones reminded me of the Tigers' classic uniform.
I see.
They've worn.
I see.
Okay, so I was confused as usual. So okay,
right.
I do like those. I do like those gray kind of
Yeah, they're really nice, man. I got to figure out something here. I got to get one of those. But I'm sure that was kind of a disappointing way to kick off the season, but I know that they figured the Giants were going to be tough anyway, and they're going to Jingu for the next three to start this week off, so I think they'll get back on the right foot here and get off the schneid, as people like to say, right?
Yeah, they say. Okay.
An impressive series was the Hiroshima Carp, though, at DeNA. And I thought, as we mentioned before, Oseta with the complete game on opening day was awesome. But we saw Tyler Austin dealing with some kind of an injury to start the season. So he didn't start any of the games. We saw him take a couple pinch hit at bats, one of them where he hit a rocket on Friday night that I'm sure he thought, and this is his first at bat in NPB, and he thought, oh, cool, I'm going to get a single. And before he could finish the thought, it was in the glove of Takumi Miyoshi, who was throwing home. It was a bases loaded situation. He's throwing home to get the out. I think it was bases. No, it was the runners.
Well, it was a tag at home plate, and it was the tying run that was going to score. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a tough way to start your career, to have some dude come in as a defensive replacement and then pick that thing like he did. So I thought that was pretty mean. But hopefully we'll see Tyler, because he had such a really good spring and a decent that warm-up session that teams had. He looked good, and then all of a sudden he comes up with an injury. So he's dealing with that, but I was encouraged by the Bay Stars. I thought they
it was close. They didn't hit, actually.
Yeah, they didn't hit all that well, but they played really well. They a couple innings here and there on the mound, and they would have been able to turn those games around maybe in time and get the run that they needed to win the game.
Nostalgia out there had Takuki Kajitani out there and starting in center field on opening day. I'm going like, whoa.
Whoa, but at least he's healthy. I mean, it's the one good thing about, if there is any silver lining, it's that, the silver lining about this big delay is that, gave guys like him who seem to always be injured,
exactly,
he's healthy to start the season.
I mean, he's out there, he's doing a cameo. I mean, he's
hashtag high heat.
He's out there. Maybe he's actually the director of the Bay Stars movie, and he's Alfred Hitchcock, and he makes a cameo every year.
All right, I'm just going to move along. Let's go to the Pacific League, and the Buffaloes managed to avoid a sweep, and for some reason their opening day starter was out here on day three, pitching to get their first win here on Sunday. So I thought Yoshinobu Yamamoto was definitely start game one worthy. And I don't know if they remember how I said, I've always pointed this out in Japan. When you get stuck on a day in Japan, for example, you're the opening day starter, then it's like ace day every Friday and you have to face another ace. And I'm wondering if they just didn't say, you know what, we want to get Yoshinobu a bunch of wins this year, and we're going to start him in game three so he can go up against a bunch of number threes, and we have the advantage going into those games. Maybe we can pile up a bunch of wins for him. I don't know. I don't know why he was, I didn't follow every news item about the Buffaloes prior to the season, so I don't know if there was other reason. But
they named Yamaoka really early on.
Yeah. Okay, what about Saturday? What about the middle game?
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know either. So anyway, they end up losing those first two games, but they weren't swept. Yamamoto strikes out 10, fires 8 innings, scoreless innings, and they win today 4-0, beating the Rakuten Eagles and sending Miki to his first loss as a manager. So, again, the Buffaloes could have won game one and game two. I think it was game one. They had a chance with the bases loaded, couldn't really execute a situational at bat. And so they ended up not scoring late in that game, and they end up losing. Saturday they could have won, but Keita Nakagawa kind of was the GOAT that day with an error, a ball going between his legs at first base. Remember, I had him on my list of top 10 third baseman, not first baseman. Either way, I mean, it was a hard hit ball. It just went through his legs. So they're going to give him an error, but the ball was hit pretty hard. Anyway, they end up losing that game, but today they won. So they avoided the sweep.
Yeah.
And Rakuten looked good in that series as well.
They did. And I think the thing that that got me about that series was the bullpens. Rocked 10 scoreless innings for the Eagles, and I think nine runs in eight innings for the Buffaloes. Having said that, well, Yamamoto was Yamamoto. I'll tell you what struck me about Yamamoto today was every year he looks more and more like Masahiro Tanaka with better stuff. I swear, he's got the delivery. You know, he's got that perfectly balanced delivery. But the thing that got me today was how much bigger his lower body and he was in the chest was. He's always been on the skinny side. I would have to think he put on 6 or 7 kilograms of muscle over the winter because he looks like he's going to be a durable guy for a change, maybe.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. But, yeah, I mean, when he was a rookie and they were bringing him out of the bullpen and he was shutting teams down as a really young player, I thought, oh, man, this kid's impressive. But I never expected this, that he was going to be rising to ace level. Or, I'm sorry, number 3 starter.
Hashtag high
heat. Well, he is definitely my favorite pitcher, and he's my favorite pitcher in Japan because, A, the stuff is as good as anybody, and I say that his control is, his control now is better than Sugano's was last year. We don't know where Sugano's is, but Sugano doesn't have the stuff. The only question for him is the durability. And, and people talk about Kodai Senga, and I love, and nobody throws as, no Japanese pitchers really throw consistently as hard as Senga does, but he's not that concerned with location. it's like, I'm just cutting it and, it's going to go where I want or it's not.
Right.
Yamamoto is much closer to, he doesn't have Sugano's command, but he's not far behind.
Right. Okay, and then a really interesting series, if you want to put one more note.
Yeah. And the other thing, the last thing that struck me about this series, and we all saw it in the spring, and I know you mentioned it the other day, was Takahiro Okada. And this guy.
I think Jason mentioned it.
Mentioned it, okay. This is a guy who looked like he'd been to a taxidermist for about the last 6 or 7 seasons. He had no fire. It was like he was resigned to, playing out his career as a former Oryx Buffalo's star. But what I saw this series was a guy who was balanced and poised at the plate, and he was attacking everything. He was attacking. He was, in his whole approach, his swing was balanced. He wasn't overstriding. He was able to stay back on breaking balls, and he was just swinging mercilessly. And in the field, he looked confident. Having said that, he looked like the Okada we've seen in recent years, sort of like clueless at the plate. We saw that in the last one. He got fooled quite a bit in his last plate appearance on Sunday, but boy, he had some fire. And I was thinking, whoa, if he can be half of that, for the rest of the season, he's going to be a player.
Okay, well, can be a player. You just got to be a guy who's the consistency is the big thing for me, and then playing defense too. You got to play both.
I mean, he looked good. He looked like he really cared.
I didn't know you cared.
That's not what I mean. I mean, we've had great players. And I'll say Kazuhiro Kiyohara comes to mind. Alex Cabrera is another guys, and Tsuyoshi Nishioka is another who are supremely talented. But sometimes you got the feeling that the game they happen to be playing in didn't rise to their expectations. They couldn't be bothered. You know, they just couldn't be bothered to be what they could be. And, you know, it's a long season, and I understand, and you're human beings, but there are guys who are more consistently into it.
Well, he's 32. It's about time you get into it. So
yeah, indeed. Well, I'm 60, and I'm working on getting into it too. So I shouldn't.
All right, buddy.
I shouldn't be throwing stones.
All right, let's move on to the next series, and that was the Marines playing the 90,000 time defending champion SoftBank Hawks. Seems like they win every year.
Well, they've won the Japan Series 5 times out of 6, but they haven't won the Pacific League in years.
That's correct, and they have been struggling against the Marines it's over 28 meetings now in which the Marines are 19-9 against SoftBank, and they won the series. They won 2 out of 3 in Fukuoka, and that's a really strong start for a team that I predicted would finish third. And I don't know, what was the most surprising thing for you in that series? I thought it was the fact that they just the Hawks didn't score a lot. They just didn't seem to be in a rhythm offensively. And they barely won the first game. It was one of the two games that went to extra innings on Friday night on opening day. And they needed somebody named Ryoya Kurihara to get a walk-off hit. And I was wondering, who is this guy? Because I always say that with the three levels that the Hawks have in their system, that when a guy gets to the top level and he's actually out there on the field, I don't think about, you know, who the heck is this? I think this guy went through a heck of a lot to get to this point in his career, to be on the field right now. He must be good. And then I let him, you know, it's basically a guilty before proven innocent, because I'm sure he's good, and he has to prove to me that he's not good. And Kurihara had a couple hits that first game and got the walk-off hit. So sixth-year guy who was a second-round pick in 2014 and listed as a catcher and was playing first base, but he got the job done for them. And that was the only game they won. And, you know, you've got Manabu Mima out there winning his first game in his debut with the team that he moved to as a free agent in the offseason. So it was a real good and a grand slam by Chubbs Inoue. What did you see in that series?
Pretty simple. I saw that I'm just going to keep it simple. The bullpens were both about the same, but the difference was the Marines got 3 very solid starts, and the Hawks got 2. Of course, no one was surprised that Akira Niho, wasn't the surprise answer. You know, it's more like Kimiyasu Kudo's going to, you know, let's see if it sticks. Let's throw it up there and see if this guy sticks. He's had some good games in the past, and I don't want to denigrate him, but he's a journeyman at best, and fortunately, he didn't give up the grand slam, but he did set it up.
That he did with getting kicked out of the game with a pitch to the helmet of Shogo Nakamura, but who went to the hospital. I didn't hear the report on him, but I'm assuming he's going to be okay. And that set up for rookie Yuki Tsumori to come on and be the first pitcher in NPB history to give up a grand slam to the first batter that he faced. Mm-hmm. So congratulations and welcome to starting your own club. That's good old Chubbs Inoue. That was a good series, obviously, for the Marines, a good start for them. And I kind of felt like the SoftBank Hawks just didn't have their swings going, but that'll turn around for them. I think Coco Ballantyne was an example of that. He took a lot of strikes or missed some balls. So I think that'll turn around for them. But I think the most surprising thing about the weekend for me was the series between the Lions and the Fighters out in Tokorozawa, and the Lions just not being able to score a lot of runs.
Score not even a lot. You know, like
hardly any, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I kind of remember them getting off to a so-so start last season. I'm really not worried about them. They have the deepest lineup, the most powerful lineup. And remember how I still am wiping the drool off of my microphone that Dion Viciado had when I interviewed him and talked about the Lions and the way he talked about that lineup. And we've seen this aspect as well. You know, Corey Spangenberg had a really good spring. He was cracking everything. And then I think, was it the opener that he struck out four times? So, I mean, these things happen. What do you guys do?
I think, you know, people say it a lot. And I don't, to be honest, I don't want to say I give too much credence to it because it's easier said than done. And Frank Herrmann said last week that if, you know, if you've got a hole swing, if there's something that a weakness, Japanese pitchers will exploit. If there's something you can't hit, they'll exploit it mercilessly. And I have to think that Corey Spangenberg is adjusting as we speak to people pitching him outside, because he just sliders and any kind of breaking balls, low, it's like low and away. They're just targeting low and away. And of course, one time he did strike out because he was probably lean, and I don't recall the at bat, but he did strike out once on an inside pitch after seeing like five outside or on the corner. And so he's got his work cut out for him. So that's, you know what? You know, that's his job, and I expect he'll find a solution to that. You know, we all do. But right now, it looks like that is exactly what Frank Herrmann predicted, is that if you swing and miss, they weren't all sliders. I mean, some of them were, you know, Takayuki Kato for the Fighters is a kind of a low three-quarters guy, and when he throws a splitter, it has that same kind of slider action. It's a little different movement, but it's the same kind of pitch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's just like swing and miss, swing and miss, swing and miss, swing. He fouled off a couple of those splitters, but it was pretty tough on him. And I think, I suppose, you know, he didn't get here by accident. And so
that's
right. So he's here for a reason, and he's got enough confidence, and he's got the support network. So I expect that he'll be able to make the adjustments, and, you know, and next time, but then before long, you know, people will have a surprise when they try that.
Yeah, I'm not going to take too much from one series, but
no.
I'm just pointing out that these guys, they're not machines, and they,
no,
even though he had a really good spring and the warm-up session, when the real game starts, sometimes the struggles start as well. But I'm sure he'll make adjustments. He has been making them his whole career, so why is he not making them there? But Zach Neale won the opener, looks pretty good. And actually, Wataru Matsumoto in the middle game,
he played well. Yep.
And even rookie Kaito Yoza today, wasn't exactly terrible. He gave up a home run early, but only a couple runs over.
Three over six, I think. Quality start. Yeah, they were all good. I mean, and Matsumoto had, he did have some poor control. I thought one of the interesting things I noticed I didn't notice so much today, but I did notice that some of the pitchers' locations were probably not quite game ready.
Right.
And that some of the teams, especially the Fighters on Saturday when I watched the Lions-Fighters game, were really, and the Lions hitters too to some degree, were very keyed into the fact that the pitchers might not be able to throw strikes that well. They were really laying off. They were really ready to lay off pitches, and that really is what sank Matsumoto, was falling behind and, you know, walking a couple of guys and then falling behind in the count to Sho Nakata.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was a fun weekend, and I look forward. I think in the Pacific League we're going to see the six-game series in which I bet Jason Koskri of the Japan Times that we won't see any six-game sweeps in these – you know, matchups of the same teams over essentially a week. They play each other until they get sick of each other. They're going to be fighting like brothers by the end of the weekend. But, yeah, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to this and see how that plays out. All right, let's go to fielding questions. So the first one comes from Igor in the Kansai area, and he sent us a high heat via Twitter, and he says, as Buffalo's fans, should we be worried about Adam Jones's quiet training games? And this was before, actually, the season started. So he says, I'm not, but some Buffalo's fans are worried. He says he's always listening to the JBW podcast, and he thanks us. So, thank you for listening. We've seen several versions of the major leaguer who comes to Japan and struggles. The one who has a great spring and then stumbles. The one who looks bad in the spring and works through it a little bit during the regular season, starts to get a little bit hot, and then falls off. We've seen the guys who just never seem to put it together. We've seen the guys who have a good start in the regular season, and then they're gone by about halfway through or something. Then you get the guys who are like the Alex Ramirez type, who we never see coming, and they just are good. The Alonzo Powells, the Matt Mertens, the Randy Basses, the Coco Ballantines. We've seen these guys. I don't know where Adam Jones falls. I like his swing. I like his approach. Jim was talking about balance early on, and it just seems like he's not swinging out of control and chasing a lot of bad balls. And to me, it was more like he was just not pulling the trigger on some pitches during the warm-up games and the spring season. But he never looked overmatched. He never looked like he didn't know what he was doing. It was a timing thing. He missed some pitches on occasion. I really like the swing. I see some promise. And he had 3 hits in this first series, including a double. He hit the ball with some authority there. I don't know. We can't see until we see. And I always thought our buddy Bobby Scales was going to hit in Japan, and that it was, you know, he said it was a timing thing, and he never really became that hitter that we expected to see. And I didn't see anything wrong with his approach and all those other things. It just didn't happen for him. I don't know why, but I think Adam Jones can still play. Like I said, I like the swing and I see promise, but I don't think we could look at the results at this point and look at preseason and warm-up games and say, oh, he's not going to make it.
You mean we can't look at 15 at-bats and decide whether the guy can hit or not? Wow.
Well, it was more than 15, though. It was a whole spring plus the practice games plus the warm-up games once they announced the...
Okay, whatever. Okay.
So, yeah. Okay. What is this
basically, you can't, yeah, I mean, you can't look at 100 plate appearances and tell me that this guy can't play. I'm just going to say no. And I don't care if he goes, you know, if he goes 8 for 100. It doesn't mean anything. It happens. So that's just that. I mean, I saw what you saw, which was good approach. I think he's getting used to what strikes and balls are being called.
Yeah.
Saw that one today, was not really, you know, he was, but you know, he got a called third strike, and he showed who he is, which is, man, that's weird. I'm still enjoying being here. You know,
yeah.
He's a joyful person, it seems, and he's enjoying this situation, and he's enjoying the effort, and he wants to play baseball and do well. And his approach looked balanced. I mean, he had that, you know, he had a little bit of that Takahiro Okada from the other side of the plate, was I'm going to see my pitch and I'm going to rip it.
Mm-hmm. I'm
not too worried about other things. If I get behind, I'll do this. If I do, you know, his approach is solid. It's a different, you know, he's got to get used to different pitchers and different pitches and different approaches and timing. And yeah, I, you know what I think? Big deal. He'll get used to it.
Yeah, I remember one of my phrases, losing is learning, and I think when he got beat on some pitches, every time he was like, okay, I'm going to file that away, and he has been, and he's still, and I'm sure even today, you said it took a call to third strike that looked outside all the way until it moved at the last second and might have brushed.
Yeah, it did. I think it did crease the zone, but here's the thing. It was a pitch that was, I think when it got to the catcher, it was out of the zone. It was going, it moved out. And he was looking at it, but I thought it was low. I didn't think it was in the zone. I thought it was low out of the zone.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a strike either, but yeah. It's one of those close enough pitches. And
yeah, I mean, I know Adelin Rodriguez got called out on one that was a much better pitch than that. And he was mystified. So yeah, okay.
Yeah. So yeah. So yeah.
Don't worry. Don't worry, be happy. That's what
don't worry. I'm not going to say don't worry, be happy. I'm going to say that the jury's still out, and you know every at bat is an opportunity to prove yourself. Every game is an opportunity to prove yourself. It doesn't. You won't. I won't say okay. Well, he's 30 games in, and he's hitting .335. That means he's good. He's going to make it. I you know, because he could at some point have struggle and finish the season somewhere else. You know, far below .300 or. Something you never know, so you go out and prove it every day.
That's true. Next season, he could still be waiting for his pitch.
All right, and then back to this would be the last installment of the great Pete in Kansai. His question via Facebook asking us to rank the top 10 infield positions, and we have reached the end. Shortstop.
I hear you, your sigh of relief coming.
No, I enjoyed the project, I have to admit, because I don't really always pay that much attention to, I don't pay attention to the UVRs and fielding percentages as much as I probably should. So this made me go through
the ones where they try to turn fielding into runs. They're very volatile. The numbers aren't very stable, so you'll see somebody like, "Wow, he's a good player. How did he rate at -75 fielding runs?"
Right.
You know, it's just because you know he'll be great, and then you know things will the calculus won't work for him 1 year. So 1 year is just too volatile for me to really take those seriously. And actually, I did averages of a bunch of the stuff I have, so.
Okay. All right. Well, best shortstop or top 10 shortstops in Japan. Jim, you're number 10.
Yeah, tough one at the bottom here because, first of all, we don't really have 10 shortstops who've played a lot the last couple of years.
Mm.
So I'm going to go, and I moved a couple of people up and down basically. Do I want this guy or do I want somebody else based on their age and injuries? So, okay, number 10, Yudai Fujioka.
Huh, not on my list.
Okay.
Not on my
list. It could easily have not have been on mine either.
I went with Eiichiro Mogi of Rakuten because I was surprised to see, because I had this image of him not really having a great anything, range, arm, and all these other things. But he made a lot of plays, and he's... Fielding percentage was pretty good, and his UZR was pretty high compared to some of the other guys who are not on my list. So I put him on at 10.
He's had some. He had an arm injury 2 years ago, the end of his rookie year, that it's been a trouble for him coming back. He has come back, but no, he's just I think a really smart guy. That you know, you like it's nice to have smart guys in the middle of the field. I mean, quick thinkers. So I have him at 9.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. My number 9 is Kaito Kozono of Hiroshima, just because he's so athletic. I know he didn't play a great deal of short, but he got his opportunities to play last year. And I was impressed with what I saw with him athletically. I know he made some errors. And again, I'm really, the errors just happen. I'm just worried about what a guy does normally. Does he make those routine plays as, Tony Barnett always said, just, you know, make the routine plays. And after that, if you get to some of the other balls and make some fantastic plays, then good. So he was basically making the routine plays if you take away a couple errors here and there. So he's on my number 9.
Who's your number 8?
My number 8, Seiya Kinami of Hanshin. And Yeah, I actually wanted to put him up higher, and I think I did. But, again, fielding percentage usually are when you start to factor in all those things. He wasn't very high, so he kept dropping on the list and ended up at 8.
Yeah, he got bumped off my list. I have a Takuya Nakashima at number 8. Yes. Well, he's one of these guys who's, you know, when you look at UZRs and double plays, they're very inconsistent. They're good one year and bad the other. Overall, I'll cut the average and actually I picked him up. I don't remember if I dropped him down or picked him up, but yeah, he's in the lower half.
Huh. Okay. He's on my list. I'll let you know. That's as far as I go with that. Okay. So, all right. My number 7 is Kosuke Tanaka of Hiroshima. So I have two Hiroshima guys on there. One for the first half of last season and the other one for the second half.
I have a guy who's not young and he could rank higher if he did this he would definitely rank higher if he does it again this year. And that's Yamato Maeda. Stars. And his numbers are actually better, but I thought, okay, I'm going to stay away from the guys who are ready for Social Security benefits.
Security, I knew you were going there. You're just so mean. Yeah, he's really good. My number 6 is Hayato Sakamoto. Now, let me explain. I know he's great, and the scouts have always loved him since the day he took the field. But he's getting up there. Remember I told you I bumped into him at Sabre Dome last year during the interleague season and
he dropped his cane?
Picked up his cane. Form says he could barely bend over to pick it up. No. He was coming out of the trainer's room and talked about how he was an old man and all these other things. And he's still really good, but when you look closely at the numbers, he's not as good as any of the guys I have listed above him, and he just kept dropping on the list and ended up at number 6.
Now, had I weighted him, if I had put more weight, you know, if I'd put more weight on 2019, this list would have been really different. But I weighted the last 3 seasons basically the same. At number 6, I have Yota Kyoda. And that's only because, again, it's a matter of experience, and, you know, he's done it for 3 years, but still his numbers they're good. They're solid. They're solid.
They're good. They're solid.
Although having said that, when I was asked in my scouting course
over the winter,
it was in November. I think I might have had Kyoto as the Central League's best shortstop, but that was looking at it I was looking at no numbers. I was just physically, yeah, I like him in terms of his tools and his potential. I like him probably more than anybody. But the numbers, I'll have to say, he still has to, you know, get it done.
Prove it, chump. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, pretty much, but without the chump or the Social Security or the cane references, yeah.
Okay. All right. For me, at number 5, Yamato Maeda, and the reason I didn't worry about his age, this guy fields the ball, and we talked about it when he moved over to the Bay Stars about, well, he automatically walks through the door as their best defensive shortstop. And that's his best position, although he plays a mean second base and a good center field as well.
Yes, well, he's won a Golden Glove the first year he played center field, so yeah.
Yeah, the dude can play with the glove in his hand, and I like him. So I actually didn't have him as high either. I had him on the list, and he kept getting moved up, and that's how he jumped in front of Hayato Sakamoto. So he's my number 5.
My number 5 is Kosuke Tanaka, and he would have been much higher if it hadn't been for the injury that he had that wiped out his season last year. So,
and I'll remind listeners that I said the first time I saw him, I said, this guy is really good, and you were not convinced.
I wasn't, because there were things going on with the Carp infield. They needed a little time. He needed a year to settle in. And I wasn't really looking at his, I wasn't looking at his form. I was just looking, I'm going, these numbers, to blow.
Okay. Whatever, dude.
You know, sometimes you do this and sometimes you do that.
Okay. It's true. It's true. All right. My number four is Kenta Imamiya of SoftBank.
Ditto.
Wow. I think our, no, that's not true.
No, yeah, it ain't true because I've got, I've still got one guy you've already mentioned.
Yeah. Okay, so we both have number four. Who's your number three?
Now, this is my shock. I never expected to see this guy anywhere near the top. He was my candidate for the Tsuyoshi Nishioka. I can play short, but I don't want to. Or I can't be bothered. Ryuichi Adachi. And he also was ill. But when you look at the overall package, and of course, when he came up, in my mind, he was without a doubt the best. He had the best shortstop tools in the Pacific League. And he was the guy who couldn't be bothered to pay attention to routine balls, you know, dropping the ball and making goofy errors, and just disappointing. But having said that, despite all that, the overall package has been very impressive. And then the other people who were older got pushed down. So I have not three.
Yeah, I just didn't put him on the list because I didn't think he played he didn't play enough, period.
Last year, no, he was pretty much out of it.
Yeah, if you're not going to be out there playing, you're not going to get
him. Last year, but he's...
I love the tool. Yeah, last year. Yeah, last season. Okay. Only. I love the guy, but yeah, just not enough.
He looks like he means it this year, but it's still the first weekend, so we'll see.
Yeah, let's keep it going there. All right, my number three is Takuya Nakashima, who you had at what was it, eight?
To be honest, I don't think there's a huge difference between eight and two here, though, to be honest.
I'm with you because we're talking about, you know, who can get to some of these impossible plays and who can actually, once they get there, throw it across the field to make the out. And I think the top five guys can do it. Maybe even Sakamoto. Yeah, you know, Tanaka can do it. Kinami can do it. You're right. I mean, the difference is
physically. I mean, I look at these guys physically, and of any of the guys on my list, I would say Mogi's probably the physically the most limited of all these guys.
Okay.
And but
the rest are pretty cool. And maybe Sakamoto with all the
Sakamoto now, but Sakamoto is, you know, now he's always had a little bit of the smarts going on there. You know, he's always had that. He doesn't get credit for it because he's a hitter.
Right.
And he had throwing issues when he was young. But he's slow. He's definitely slower, but he's still sharp as a tack as a player. And I really like to have him. I want him on my team, and not just for the home runs and the other things. So I have him second.
Okay, my number two, Yota Kyoda, and now we're going to get into some UZR talk. Nakashima had a really high UZR of 15.9, and Kyoda had a UZR of 17.5. Plus, he was number two in fielding percentage. Nakashima was number one, so it was a hard choice for me, but I took the guy with the better UZR. And he's strong. You know, I did an interview with him 2018 with Kyoda.
Oh, yeah.
Stood next to him, and he's so much bigger. You know, I remember you saying when he and Genda broke in together that he was those two were twins. And I thought, okay, but Genda is so slight, and he's smaller. And Kyoda is tall. He's a big kid.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. It's hard for me to get a glimpse of these players not getting to go to the ballpark very often. But
I know. But,
Genda is skinny. I mean, I'll give you that. He's not short, but he is skinny. I would say, yeah, Kyoda, like I said, I did like his physical tools are very impressive.
Right. So so your number one, obviously, Sosuke Genda.
Sosuke Genda, without a doubt. I mean, not like they're really, I'll be honest, he had a lousy year last year. He was hurt. He broke a bone, or he had a bone bruise in his hand. early on, and he missed some games for the first time in his career, and he was pretty mediocre for him. He was an above-average professional shortstop who was, you know, he might have had a crutch out there. He might have been playing with on crutches, and he would have been better than everybody else.
Well, I looked at these UZR numbers, and I was so impressed. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. You know, we're talking, what is a good shortstop? So I went to Fangraphs in the major league. I said, who's the UZR leader? And it was Paul DeJong of the St. Louis Cardinals at 11.4. And I looked at these guys in Japan, and the top three, Nakashima with 15.9, Kyoto with 17.5, Ed Genda with 22.4.
I saw that 22, and I'm going, yeah, okay.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
That's superhuman. What is going on out
here? As I said, with my thing about the UZRs and the UZRs and the numbers they use with the WAR is that they're extremely volatile. So my system works essentially spits out the same numbers long term.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too long and complicated, so I won't even bother. But Genda, who had his worst season last year as a professional, and he was still pretty darn good. If he could repeat his 2017 and 2018 every year.
I'm scared to see what his WAR would be if he's not injured at all. But what a great question.
You know, it is hard, although I don't compare him. Technically, I don't compare him to average shortstops, but you kind of compare the team's shortstops to every other team. You know, mm-hmm. the norm of fielding percentage for the league. What's the norm of, you know, how often they turn double plays? What's the norm of the number of, you know, how often they get assists and putouts and so on? And then you use that based on other things, like knowing that teams, the better your team is, the less opportunities they have to put. Now, and this is something which it's kind of inverse, but the better the team is, the fewer opportunities they have to make plays, generally. I mean, usually the worst defenses make the most plays.
Okay.
There are things in that system, but the Lions with a good team but a horrible pitching really changes that dynamic. And Genda might have been better than I gave him credit for even.
Yeah. Well, that's sick, crazy, nutty. But that was a great question, Pete. 5 weeks of just awesome
nonstop fun for us.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Igoru-san. Thank you very much. Both guys in the Kansai region. So we're either going Kansai or Canada. That's fine.
Right. I think we're just going to call Osaka and that area. So we'll just call it West Canada. Canada. Come on, you Americans, pick up your game, dudes.
Yeah. This has been a pleasure. Thanks so much for the questions. You know, we've got baseball back. I'm so happy. But let us know if you have any questions or you just want to comment. And like I said before, it's a good way to get us to talk about your team on the show is to ask a question about your team. So hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions by email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. You can hit us up on the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look us up on iTunes and do me a favor and leave us a review. I don't care how many stars, but just leave us a review and let us know what's going on out there. We will talk to you next week, and I'm glad I can say this again. Enjoy your baseball.
And hopefully we'll see you at the ballpark. And for any JBallAllen.com subscribers, Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Japan time, we'll be watching a game live via streaming. Haven't decided what game. Something we can all watch, Zoom or Skype or something. We're going to be connecting and watching baseball games. So if you're interested, check out JBallAllen.com and see you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.